Chapter 47. No. So it was reality that you were seeking. He repeated as if speaking to himself, colon, and now I am sure. Her sandaled foot, all rosy in the glow, felt the warmth of the embers. The tepid night had enveloped her body, and still under the impression of his strength she gave herself up to a momentary feeling of quietude that came about her heart as soft as the night air penetrated by the feeble clearness of the stars. This is a limpid soul, she thought. You know I always believed in you, he began again. Why you know I did? Well, I never believed in you so much as I do now, as you sit there, just as you are, and with hardly enough light to make you out by. It occurred to her that as he had never heard a voice she liked so well except one, but that had been a great actor's voice, whereas this man was nothing in the world but his very own self. He persuaded, he moved, he disturbed, he soothed by his inherent truth. He had wanted to make sure, and he had made sure apparently, and too weary to resist the waywardness of her thoughts, Mrs. Travers reflected with a sort of amusement, that apparently he had not been disappointed. She thought, he believes in me. What amazing words. Of all the people that might have believed in me, I had to find this one here. He believes in me more than in himself. A gust of sudden remorse tore her out from her quietness, made her cry out to him. Captain Lingard, we forget how we have met, we forget what is going on. We mustn't. I won't say that you placed your belief wrongly, but I have to confess something to you. I must tell you how I came here tonight. Jorgensen. Dot, he interrupted her forcibly, but without raising his voice. Jorgensen. Who's Jorgensen? You came to me because you couldn't help yourself. This took her breath away. But I must tell you. There is something in my coming which is not clear to me. You can tell me nothing that I don't know already, he said in a pleading tone. Say nothing. Sit still. Time enough tomorrow. Tomorrow. The night is drawing to an end, and I care for nothing in the world but you. Let me be. Give me the rest that is in you. As he had never heard such accents on his lips, and she felt for him a great and tender pity. Why not humor this mood in which he wanted to preserve the moments that would never come to him again on this earth? She hesitated in silence. She saw him stir in the darkness, as if he could not make up his mind to sit down on the bench. But suddenly he scattered the embers with his foot, and sank on the ground against her feet, and she was not startled in the least, to feel the weight of his head on her knee. Mrs. Travers was not startled, but she felt profoundly moved. Why should she torment him with all those questions of freedom and captivity, of violence and intrigue, of life and death? He was not in a state to be told anything, and it seemed to her that she did not want to speak, that in the greatness of her compassion she simply could not speak. All she could do for him was to rest her hand lightly on his head, and respond silently to the slight movement she felt, sigh or sob, but a movement which suddenly immobilized her in an anxious emotion. About the same time on the other side of the lagoon, Jorgensen, raising his eyes, noted the stars and said to himself that the night would not last long now. He wished for daylight. He hoped that Lingard had already done something. The blaze in Tenga's compound had been relighted. Tom's power was unbounded, practically unbounded. And he was invulnerable. Jorgensen let his old eyes wander amongst the gleams and shadows of the great sheet of water between him and that hostile shore, and fancied he could detect a floating shadow having the characteristic shape of a man in a small canoe. Oh, yeah, man, he hailed. What do you want? Other eyes, too, had detected that shadow. Low murmurs arose on the deck of the Emma. If you don't speak at once, I shall fire, shouted Jorgensen, fiercely. No, white man, returned the floating shape in a solemn drawl. I am the bearer of friendly words. A chief's words. I come from Tenga. There was a bullet that came on board not a long time ago also from Tenga, said Jorgensen. That was an accident, protested the voice from the lagoon. What else could it be? Is there war between you and Tenga? No, no, oh white man. All Tenga desires is a long talk. He has sent me to ask you to come ashore. At these words Jorgensen's heart sank a little. This invitation meant that Lingard had made no move. Was Tom asleep or altogether mad? The talk would be of peace, declared impressively the shadow which had drifted much closer to the hulk now. It isn't for me to talk with great chiefs, Jorgensen returned, cautiously. But Tenga is a friend, argued the nocturnal messenger. And by that fire there are other friends, your friends, the Raja Asim and the Lady Imada, who send you their greetings, and who expect their eyes to rest on you before sunrise. That's a lie, remarked Jorgensen, perfunctorily, and fell into thought, while the shadowy bearer of words preserved a scandalized silence, though, of course, he had not expected to be believed for a moment. But one could never tell what a white man would believe. He had wanted to produce the impression that Asim and Imada were the honored guests of Tenga. It occurred to him suddenly that perhaps Jorgensen didn't know anything of the capture. And he persisted. My words are all true, Tuan. The Raja of Wajo and his sister are with my master. I left them sitting by the fire on Tenga's right hand. Will you come ashore to be welcomed amongst friends? Jorgensen had been reflecting profoundly. His object was to gain as much time as possible for Lingard's interference, which indeed could not fail to be effective. But he had not the slightest wish to entrust himself to Tenga's friendliness. Not that he minded the risk, but he did not see the use of taking it. No, he said, I can't go ashore. We white men have ways of our own, and I am chief of this hulk. And my chief is the Raja Lot, a white man like myself. All the words that matter are in him, and if Tenga is such a great chief, let him ask the Raja Lot for a talk. Yes, that's the proper thing for Tenga to do, if he is such a great chief as he says. The Raja Lot has made his choice. He dwells with Belarab, and with the white people who are huddled together like trapped deer in Belarab's stockade. Why shouldn't you meantime go over where everything is lighted up, and open and talk in friendship with Tenga's friends, whose hearts have been made sick by many doubts? Raja Asim and the Lady Imada and Damon, the chief of the men of the sea, who do not know now whom they can trust, unless it be you, Tuan, the keeper of much wealth? The diplomatist in the small dugout paused for a moment, to give special weight to the final argument. Which you have no means to defend. We know how many armed men there are with you. They are great fighters, Jorgensen observed, unconcernedly, spreading his elbows on the rail, and looking over at the floating black patch of characteristic shape, whence proceeded the voice of the wily envoy of Tenga. Each man of them is worth 10 of such as you can find in the settlement. Yes, by Allah, even worth 20 of these common people. Indeed, you have enough with you to make a great fight, but not enough for victory. God alone gives victory, said suddenly the voice of Jaffer, who, very still at Jorgensen's elbow, had been listening to the conversation. Very true, was the answer in an extremely conventional tone. Will you come ashore, O white man, and be the leader of chiefs? I have been that before, said Jorgensen, with great dignity, and now all I want is peace. But I won't come ashore amongst people whose minds are so much troubled, till Raja Asim and his sister return on board this ship, and tell me the tale of their new friendship with Tenga. His heart was sinking with every minute, the very air was growing heavier with the sense of oncoming disaster, on that night, that was neither war nor peace, and whose only voice was the voice of Tenga's envoy, insinuating in tone, though menacing in words. No, that cannot be, said that voice. Be, but, Tuan, verily Tenga himself is ready to come on board here to talk with you. He is very ready to come and indeed, Tuan. He means to come on board here before very long. Yes, with 50 war canoes filled with the ferocious rabble of the shore of refuge, Jaffer was heard commenting, sarcastically, over the rail, And a sinister muttered, "He may be so," ascended alongside from the black water. Jorgensen kept silent, as if waiting for a supreme inspiration, and suddenly he spoke in his other world voice, "Colon tell Tenga from me that, as long as he brings with him Raja Assam and the Raja's sister, he and his chief men will be welcome on deck here, no matter how many boats come along with them. For that I do not care. You may go now." A profound silence succeeded. It was clear that the envoy was gone, keeping in the shadow of the shore. Jorgensen turned to Jaffer. "Death amongst friends is but a festival," he quoted, mumbling in his mustache. "It is, by Allah," assented Jaffer with somber fervor. 36 hours later, Carter, alone with Lingard in the cabin of the brig, could almost feel during a pause in his talk the oppressive, the breathless peace of the shallows awaiting another sunset. "I never expected to see any of you alive," Carter began in his easy tone, but with much less carelessness in his bearing, as though his days of responsibility amongst the shoals of the shore of refuge had matured his view of the external world, and of his own place there. "Of course not," muttered Lingard. The listlessness of that man whom he had always seen acting under the stress of a secret passion seemed perfectly appalling to Carter's youthful and deliberate energy. Ever since he had found himself again face to face with Lingard, he had tried to conceal the shocking impression with a delicacy which owed nothing to training, but was as intuitive as a child's. While justifying to Lingard his manner of dealing with the situation on the shore of refuge, he could not for the life of him help asking himself, what was this new mystery? He was also young enough to long for a word of commendation. "Come, Captain," he argued, "how would you have liked to come out and find nothing but two half-burned wrecks stuck on the sands, perhaps?" He waited for a moment, then in sheer compassion turned away his eyes from that fixed gaze, from that harassed face with sunk cheeks, from that figure of indomitable strength robbed of its fire. He said to himself, "Colin, he doesn't hear me," and raised his voice without altering its self-contained tone. "I was below yesterday morning when we felt the shock, but the noise came to us only as a deep rumble. I made one jump for the companion, but that precious Shaw was before me yelling, 'Earthquake! Earthquake!' Apostrophe and I am hanged if he didn't miss his footing and land down on his head at the bottom of the stairs. I had to stop to pick him up, but I got on deck in time to see a mighty black cloud that seemed almost solid pop up from behind the forest like a balloon. It stayed there for quite a long time. Some of our Kalashes on deck swore to me that they had seen a red flash above the treetops. But that's hard to believe. I guessed at once that something had blown up on shore. My first thought was that I would never see you anymore, and I made up my mind at once to find out all the truth you have been keeping away from me. No, sir. Don't you make a mistake. I wasn't going to give you up, dead or alive." He looked hard at Lingard while saying these words and saw the first sign of animation pass over that ravaged face. He saw even its lips move slightly, but there was no sound, and Carter looked away again. "Perhaps you would have done better by telling me everything, but you left me behind on my own to be your man here. I put my hand to the work I could see before me. I am a sailor. There were two ships to look after. And here they are both for you, fit to go or to stay, to fight or to run, as you choose." He watched with bated breath the effort Lingard had to make to utter the two words of the desired commendation. "Well done. And I am your man still," Carter added, impulsively, and hastened to look away from Lingard, who had tried to smile at him and had failed. Carter didn't know what to do next, remain in the cabin or leave that unsupported strong man to himself. With a shyness completely foreign to his character, and which he could not understand himself, he suggested in an engaging murmur, and with an embarrassed assumption of his right to give advice, "Why not lie down for a bit, sir? I can attend to anything that may turn up. You seem done up, sir." He was facing Lingard, who stood on the other side of the table in a leaning forward attitude propped up on rigid arms, and stared fixedly at him perhaps? Carter felt on the verge of despair. This couldn't last. He was relieved to see Lingard shake his head slightly. "No, Mr. Carter. I think I will go on deck," said the captain of the famous brig Lightning, while his eyes roamed all over the cabin. Carter stood aside at once, but it was some little time before Lingard made a move. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.